You're listening to Alien X Radio, and this is your afternoon interview. Rolly, I do thank you very much for joining me. I know that your time is very valuable. I do thank you for giving me a call. You are one of the classic Imagineers that worked with Walt Disney on some of the great attractions. How did you end up getting hooked up with Walt Disney?
How did I end up getting to work with Walt Disney? you know, you should buy my book. Everything's in my book. No. I don't know how far back you want me to go. I mean, when I was hired or when I started working directly with Walt.
Pretty much, when was it that you became more involved directly with Walt and in the Imagineer position of where you're actually creating these attractions?
Well, it gets a little disconjointed because there was a lot of projects I did with Walt, just bits and pieces, which like the bazaar and some of the other things that I did, but they weren't what you might call starring roles. Probably the best thing for me to talk about maybe would be the Tiki Room. There was a very small group of us at WED at that time, the original Imagineers. And Walt would set up a meeting. Dick Irvine was in charge of everything at WED. And so there would be myself, there would be John Hench, Mark Davis, Claude Coates, Dick Irvine, Walt, myself, sometimes Wethel Rogers. And we'd have a work session. And it was really great working with Walt because he pretty much would sort of set it up and let us run with it. He'd give us an assignment. And then we would take and run with it a little bit, and then we'd come back and present to him what we had done and get for his review. And that was a good example of the Tiki Room. I know that when we first started talking about the Tiki Room, it was going to just be a little restaurant, almost like a little tea house type of thing. And then little by little, it grew into a much larger project. But the first thing that Walt asked me to do on the Tiki Room was design the pre-show tikis out front because he felt that when people are waiting in line to a restaurant, you know, waiting to get a table, that they should be entertained. So the first thing I was asked to do was come up with some tikis that would be out front that would talk to the public. Well, I went to John Hench, and John suggested I do some research from the library about tikis and find out, you know, all about them as much as I could. And luckily, I found a book that was written by the missionaries. The missionaries had actually lived with the natives on the South Seas. And they wrote down the list of different gods and goddesses that they believed in. And so I wrote down who the gods were. And a good example, one god was called Rongo. And Rongo was the god of agriculture. So when I did the little design, I did a little drawing of this tiki with a bowl of fruit on his head. But also, Rongo was a god of kite flying. So I had him holding a kite, which was kind of fun. Then there was Pele. Pele was the god of fire and also volcanoes. And so I did a little drawing sketch of Pele, you know, with a volcano hat and fire coming out the top. Then there was Hina, and she was the god of mist and rain. And so with the top of her little hat that she had on, I actually had the water kind of come out in a mist and kind of rain and run down on her. So these sketches that I did, I presented to Walt with the idea that naturally there would be voices over coming directly from each one of these tikis. Now, these tikis were made out of fiberglass. We sculpted the tikis and then had molds made and then cast them in fiberglass and so they could be outside and take the rain and all the elements that there was. So anyway, I had a meeting with Walt and I had about eight different little tikis that I presented to him with the names of them and what they were the god of. And there was one little tiki I did by accident that was a little tiki spitting water into a bamboo tube and then it would dump. But I didn't give it a title. Well, Walt's looking at all these little tikis I did. He says, now these are all authentic? And I said, yes, Walt, they are. And he says, what's this the god of? And I said, I didn't know what to say. I started to stammer, and because it showed the little bamboo that was he was spitting water in would come back and hit a log. So John Hinch was really kind of sweet. He spoke up very quickly and said, Tampa cloth beating. He's the god of Tampa cloth beating. Well, Walt misunderstood the word Tampa cloth and thought that John had said clock. So he said to John, he says, clock? And John said, yeah, it's the god that tells the time. And so Walt said, oh, okay, the god that tells the time. Well, once the meeting was over with, John got me and he says, Rolly, for God's sakes, go find out who the god is that tells the time. So I said, okay, and I did. I read the book on it and found it was Maui. So that was the kind. See, now these are what we call happy accidents. These, during the work sessions and stuff, some will come out and something will come out and you never really know about it. So the next thing was that once I had Walt buy off on all these sketches that I did, he said, okay, Rolly, you've got to get these sculpted. And I said, okay. So I went to the head sculptor, Blaine Gibson, and I said, Blaine, Walt wants these all sculpted. And Blaine said, Roland, I don't have time to sculpt. He said, I'm too busy with other projects. I said, well, who's going to sculpt him? He says, you are. And I said, I am? He says, yeah. And I said, but I've never sculpted before. And he says, well, you're going to be a sculptor now. So he taught me how to build the armature, and we started with Maui. And then you apply the clay that you're going to sculpt. You have to get a lot of clay packaged up onto the armature. And the clay we use is called plastiline. And plastiline clay is an oil-based clay. So you have to get it soft to push it into the armature. And the building that we were in at that time of the year, it was the early spring, was really cold. And I couldn't get the clay soft enough to push into the armature. Well, the parking lot was really quite warm and nice out. So what I did was I put the armature on a set of wheels, and went out into the parking lot and let him stand there for a while with the clay, and then I started putting the clay on. So the interesting thing about it was Maui got carved in the parking lot. And actually, there was about four other tikis that I did, and I did them all out in the parking lot. So I think that's kind of a humorous story.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The way he was fast on his feet and came up with that that excuse for what that tiki was, and then you guys had to go and do some research there and, like you said, take care of that happy accident and, solidify it. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, the thing was what I learned, and that was because of John Hinch, is whenever I was given a project, no matter what it was, the first thing I did was start to research it. Because I wanted something that was solid in my head about what I was dealing with. So that's basically how we did the pre-show tikis out there. And then eventually the building I was in warmed up a little bit, and they asked me to sculpt the bird to come out of the ceiling on that armature. It's like a chandelier. So they said, Rolly, we got to get that sculpted. So what they did was the fellows at the machine shop built this thing that opened up, came out of the ceiling, and it was going to hold about 30 birds, but it was just a wire. It was just all wire and metal. So it was my responsibility to make a piece of sculpture out of it. So what I did, they had a Raymond lift, something you get on, it would lift you up there. So you're about 15, 20 feet in the air so that you can get around this thing. And so I applied all the plastiline clay to that and actually sculpted it from scratch. I didn't even have a clue what I was doing. All I knew was I'm putting clay on something that they sent me, and then I'll try to make it look like it's actually what I ended up doing to make it look like driftwood, like something that kind of came out of the ocean. And of course it supported 30 birds. They were the girls. They were all white birds. And I put little sequins in their breasts, so when it turned, the whole thing turned, they would sparkle. And so Walt kind of called them his Las Vegas showgirls.
Sweet, sweet. Obviously, when anybody's working for a company this big, a lot of people don't want to, rock the boat necessarily or do things out of the ordinary. But it seems like from a couple of interviews I've seen with you, you're not that kind of person. You're not afraid to go to Walt Disney with an idea that some people might think is crazy or something that they think Walt might not like. And that has led to some really good things. And the thing that I bring up the most would be the Museum of the Weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of that had to do that it was work sessions. And this all started with Walt when he was in animation. He'd have storyboards and story sessions with the guys that were designing the films. And so this was a carryover. Whenever we had work sessions, he became part of it. And it was really great. He'd let you run with the ball. And then if he felt you might be going a little to the right or the left, he would just kind of steer you in the right direction. So, and it was really interesting. A lot of things that I got involved with him were the happy accidents, little things that actually took place accidentally. So, anyway.
Okay. The Museum of the Weird.
Yeah, Museum of the Weird is a good example. when we came back from the World's Fair, we all got assignments from Walt over at WED. And Walt didn't give us an assignment because we finished up on the fair. So we all kind of sat around for a while and not really doing anything. And I had worked on the Museum of the Weird. No, not the museum. I've been working on the Haunted Mansion for a year prior to that. But the thing that bothered me the most about it was that it was just kind of an old spook house in the direction that it was taking, and I didn't like that. I felt that being that it's going to be in Disneyland, it needed a lot more imagination in it. And so what you do is you draw down from things that you've seen when you're trying to come up with something. And what I drew down from was there's a French film made of Beauty and the Beast. And in that film, this was actually made in the 40s, the Beast was this big, monstrous, lion-looking man. And he'd go out and hunt, do his hunting, and then he'd come home to his castle. And in the film, he lived in this big medieval castle. And as he walked down the hallway, there were human arms holding torches. And as he walked into the hallway, the arms would move forward so he could see where he was going. And when he got into the main dining area, or the main, I don't know what you call it, I guess the living room or whatever, there was a big fireplace, and there were human heads over the fireplace, and they were letting steam come out of them, or smoke, one or the other. And I thought, God, this is the kind of stuff we ought to get into the Haunted Mansion. So in my spare time, with nothing else to do, I started doing little pen and ink drawings of all these different things that I could come up with. Well, the first thing I came up with was a candle man. And what it was a man that was actually became a candle. His hands were up in the air, and his fingers, and the tip of his fingers had flames on them. So he was, I actually had him melting. So I had this candleman melting with his fingers on fire. That was one of them. I had another chair, a very unusual looking chair that would stand up and talk to you. And I was just developing all these crazy things, including a gypsy wagon and everything. And so it came time to give a work session with Walt. And a lot of the guys that I was working with thought my stuff was too weird. And they were telling me, Rolly, no, I think that's too weird. I don't think Walt will like that. And I said, yeah, but I think I need to, I explained to him exactly how I got started with this. So what happened was we had a four-hour work session with Walt, and they put all my stuff over in a corner. And so we were getting close to the end of the work session, and Walt said, is there anything else? And Dick Irvine said, no, I don't think so. Well, Walt says, well, what's that stuff over in the corner? And he says, well, that's something Rolly's working on. And he said, well, what is it that Rolly's working on? And he said, you ask him, because we don't know. So that was kind of cute. So Walt said, what is it? And I said, I don't know. So we pushed our chairs over to it, and I started showing him all the different sketches that I did. And some of the little sketches had been made into maquettes. I actually had models over there of some of the ideas that we had. I had a coffin clock. I had a big coffin that as it was made of like a grandfather clock. And so he just said, but how are you going to use all this stuff, Rolly? And I said, I really don't know. I says, maybe it's part of the architecture, or maybe it's sculpture that are sprinkled throughout. And I told him the same thing about we needed something that had imagination to it, something that was kind of surrealistic. And he just looked at me and he says, I think I'm going to go now. So he got up and left, and everybody came over and kind of looked at me and smiled and said, well, we told you Walt wouldn't care for that too much. So the next morning I came to work at 7:30, And believe it or not, Walt Disney was sitting in my chair at my desk. And I said, oh, God, good morning, sir. And he says, good morning. He said, you know, I didn't get an ounce of sleep last night. I said, oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. He says, no, no, it's all right. He says, all that stuff that you showed me yesterday, he says, I couldn't sleep. I had to think about it and think about it. So I said, well, and he says, I resolved it. And I said, you did? And he says, yeah. He says, what we'll do is, Rolly, we'll let you design a museum, and you can put all this weird stuff in the museum. He says, you can come up with all the stuff that you want, and how we'll advertise it is that Disneyland has collected ghosts and weird things from all over the world. Come see our Museum of the Weird. I said, oh, that's a great idea, Walt. So he said to Dick Irvine, get the rest of the guys and bring them out here. So by this time, it was 8 o'clock, and everybody else had come to work, and they brought him out. And so Walt took the time, spent pretty close to a half hour, 45 minutes, explaining to the team, the other team of guys, exactly what the Museum of the Weird would be. And then he turned around to all of us, and he said, now I'm going to go home and go to bed. And it was kind of cute because he actually did have the same clothes on when he came over that morning that he did when he left the day before. So I thought that was kind of cute. So they all came up to me after he left, and they said, you know, we knew you had a good idea. And I said, oh, yeah, thank you.
See, I was going to ask you that, too. I said, what did all those other people say to you after Walt said, hey, that was a good idea? The ones that were telling you he ain't going to like it.
Oh, yeah, they said, we all knew that that was good stuff, Rolly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I got to know who was behind me and who wasn't.
Yeah, yeah. Who had your back and who had your back way back, like way back.
yeah, way back.
So in all the time that you worked for Walt, how many attractions do you think that you work on in that time?
Well, there was a lot. You know what was really kind of cute, and I feel very fortunate. There was show designers, as they called them. You know, when you design the Haunted Mansion or when you design the Tiki Room or whatever, you became show designers. And there, Claude and Mark were probably the two lead show designers. I was a show designer as well. But I also got assignments from Walt that had nothing to do with an attraction. I did merchandise shops. I did fountains. I did anything because it was really kind of cute because from what I gather through the grapevine, Walt would just say, well, give Rolly that. So he trusted me with anything and everything he asked me to do, which I really appreciate about him. And so that really broadened my scope of working. Of course, it helped me immensely once I left the company. You know, I went in business for myself for a while, and I, because of all the experience I had with the different things he asked me to do, it was really strong. I mean, I'd really built quite an inventory. I know he asked me to do I was still working on the Museum of the Weird, and Walt stopped by one day, and he said, what are you working on, Rory? I said, I'm working on the museum. He said, no. He said, we're putting in a new Tomorrowland in Disneyland. He says, I want you to work on that. I said, oh, okay. So he turned around and he left, and sure enough, he went to Dick Irvine and said, put Rolly on that. So I was called in Dick Irvine's office, and I was given merchandise area to do, which was Mickey's Mart. I was asked to design an elevator bandstand that actually was going to be a fountain, and I did a temporary bandstand where they were going to build the Space Mountain eventually, and I did a hat shop, and I did the ticket booths, and I did the trash cans. So I did everything in the new area, and I just loved the fact that he was sweet enough to do that. Now, there's kind of a cute story behind all of that. There was a fellow that worked over at the studio that was a lawyer, and after I had left the company and retired and everything, I ran into him one day, and he came over to me and he said, no, Rolly, he says, years and years ago, he says, I was in a meeting that Walt was in, and he said, you know what Walt said? And I said, no. He said, the only person over at WED that's got any spark at all, he says, is Rolly Crump. So I was thrilled to hear that coming from somebody, you know, years later, that Walt felt that way about me.
Absolutely. I bet that was huge to you to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, God, it was. Yeah, in fact, there's one other story connected to that, is that after Walt had passed away, we all had a big luncheon up in the 33 Club, and Roy Disney was up there, and I had never met Roy. And we were all standing in line to get our to be served, and Roy came up to me and he says, "You Roly Crump?" And I said, "Yes, sir, I am." And he said, "I just want you to know my brother used to talk a lot about you." I thought that was really
wow. Sweet. That is awesome. That is great to know that he talked about you with his family.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
I get a little embarrassed mentioning that, but it's true.
No, you should never be embarrassed by your accomplishments, ever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's really it's nice to know that Walt was that type of a boss, too, that he could look into somebody, recognize what their worth is, see that spark, and then reward it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he was the best casting director that ever lived. He knew exactly who to put on what, because he really understood his designers. So I know a lot of the people in animation, he picked certain animators just to do the Donald Duck cartoons, special animators that would just work on the live act, I mean the feature animation. So he was really good about picking the right people for the right subject, you know, the right, if there was a character that was really kind of wild, he'd pick probably Willie Reitherman to do it, because Willie animated in a real wild fashion. So it was great. I mean, just to be able to study the man and know that he knew exactly what he was doing.
Well, it's nice to know, too, that he didn't hire engineers because he needed that extra. I mean, an engineer can only do so much. He needed to have those imagineers. You had to be able to design outside of the normal, outside of the box, and think, I don't know, like a kid almost, you know?
Yeah, well, there was a whole session just done on this whole box thing that we were asked to talk about, to think outside the box.
So out of all the projects that you worked on, is there a single one that stands out in front of all the other ones as being one of your favorite projects?
Everybody asks me that question. The thing is, every project that was ever given to me was my favorite at the time. And so I look back on every one of them, and they all stand out for different reasons. And so I don't really have a favorite. I have favorites for special reasons, you know. I mean, like the Museum of the Weird is really, even though it never got built, is probably my all-time favorite. But, you know, doing Small World was absolutely incredible. I mean, that was the largest project that I've ever was involved with. And I remember being in the first meeting with Walt when he says, "I want to do a little boat ride for the World's Fair about children from around the world." And we all kind of looked at him like, what in God's name is he talking about? 9 months to the day we opened Small World at the World's Fair. From the day that he had the idea. That just showed you how, with him behind you, how fast and it would turn out and how fresh it was.
Well, that's what happens when the person that's in charge, like you said, is a great orchestrator, the person that knows who to put where and when to put them there so that everything works the way it's supposed to work smoothly and get the job done. That's awesome. Out of all the interviews that you've ever done and all the questions you've ever been asked, what is the one thing that you wanted somebody to ask you, but just nobody seemed to ask you that? Is there something that is important enough that you think needs to be addressed that nobody's ever asked you?
No, you know, they've asked me every question you can possibly think of. And I think this is something kind of interesting. You always have to have more answers than questions. And if you do that, you win the war. So there's never been a time there was more questions asked of me that I couldn't answer. And it's only just because of when you do it, you know what you're doing. And so, no, I've never had anyone ask me something, or I can't think of anything that I should have been asked. No.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on my show today. I do appreciate your time, and great stories.
Okay, thank you.
And great work.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You have a great one now. Bye-bye.